With Title 42 now officially over, new immigration rules take effect today. The Biden administration is trying to control the thousands of people seeking asylum along the southern border every day. The new policy requires them to apply for asylum in countries they pass through first before applying here in the U.S. Immigration advocates immediately sued last night to block those rules.
On NBC's Today Show, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was pressed on why he claims the border is not open when some migrants are being let in.
The vast majority are being removed. I think if one asked any one of the 1.4 million people who were expelled, removed, or returned last year, I don't think they would tell you that the border is open.
Our Friday Politics Roundtable joins us to talk about that and a lot more. Sahil Kapoor is Senior National Political Reporter for NBC News. Hi, Sahil.
Great to be back.
And Domenico Montanaro is Senior Political Editor and Correspondent at NPR. Hi, Domenico.
Hey there.
Okay, so Domenico, let's start with you. President Biden is under a great deal of pressure from all sides on immigration. Why?
It's a tricky spot. I mean, his approval ratings when it comes to handling of immigration are among the lowest of any topic that we can think of or have tested. You know, you're seeing this huge increase of migrants at the border. And, you know, this has become a flashpoint issue in American politics. Republicans have used this as a culture wedge issue for years. Nothing has been able to get solved in Congress, nothing since 2013, where 68 senators actually voted in favor of a degree of comprehensive immigration reform. And absolutely nothing has been able to move since, not even for you know, those who were born in the United States or brought to the country as children with the DREAM Act.
Yeah. Well, Republicans tried last night in the House. They passed their own immigration plan. It would restart construction on the existing border wall, make it harder to qualify for asylum, and then also allow for lengthy detentions of migrant families. Speaker Kevin McCarthy accused the president of being unprepared for the end of Title 42, which, as we have been reporting, allowed for quick expulsions of migrants during the pandemic.
We all knew the deadline, but the White House produced no plan, missed the deadline, and bumbled into another crisis.
So, Sahil, we just heard Domenico say it's been, like, what, since 2013, since there's been anything close to getting through Congress. I mean, this isn't going to get through the Senate. So, you know, what do you think about any realistic movement toward a solution?
It's very difficult to see a legislative solution on Capitol Hill that can pass through this divided Congress and get signed by President Biden. There are numerous proposals on the table. A recent one by a quasi-bipartisan one by Senator Kyrsten Sinema, the Democrat turned independent, and Senator Tom Tillis, the Republican, which would extend Title 42 for 2 years, essentially do it legislatively and take it out of the hands of the executive branch. That is unlikely to pass at this time. There's the House passed bill that you just mentioned that's very security focused, very enforcement focused, trying to be tough on the border, that Republicans support, but most Democrats don't. And the reason is most Democrats want a comprehensive bill that deals with asylum, that, you know, provides more resources at the border, but also deals with gaps in the legal immigration system and addresses at least some portion of those who are here illegally. So where that meets in the middle, where that overlap is at this point is extremely difficult to see, in large part because Republicans now feel the wind at their backs on this issue. It wasn't like that in 2013. Republicans were spooked that the country was moving away from them on immigration. But now the president's approval rating on his handling of immigration is low. And generally, voters say in surveys that they trust Republicans over Democrats to handle this issue.
That's right. I mean, in 2012, you know, the Republican National Committee put out an autopsy of its problems during that election, noted that the changing demographics of the country were favoring Democrats and they needed to do something to more appeal to Latinos in this country. And, you know, McCarthy wants to put all of this on the White House, but Republicans have been largely to blame for any lack of movement or compromise in Congress to solve any of these issues, like the real backlog that exists in the courts. And there's a real bottleneck, and there hasn't been any help from Congress to try to figure that out or loosen it.
Well, let's move away from immigration and toward the former president. Tuesday, a jury found former President Trump liable for sexually assaulting and defaming writer E. Jean Carroll. And in a CNN town hall hosted by Caitlin Collins, Trump opened himself possibly to another lawsuit from her.
Mr. President, this is a you're fake recounting your version story. Of events here right now to the audience.
I have no idea who the hell, she's a Mr. whack President. Job.
So did we learn anything, Domenico, from this town hall?
Well, we learned a lot from this town hall that things have not changed with the former president. And I don't think anybody should be so naive to think that he would. He's 76 years old. He knows what has gotten him to where he is when it comes to politics. His team may have wanted him to try to reach out to those persuadable voters who he's been toxic with. I mean, his brand has been super underwater when it comes to independence. It's a main reason why Republicans lost or didn't do as well as they had expected to in the 2022 midterms. We're talking about three election cycles where Republicans have underperformed, where they are the party of Trump. And that is not something that Trump appears that he wants to be doing. Instead, he was able to use the media as a punching bag once again, be able to show sort of some of these, I would say, are autocratic, curious tendencies that his base really loves. And he's winning with them. And Republican candidates, if they want to beat him, are going to have to really change their tactics. Otherwise, we're barreling toward a Biden-Trump rematch.
Sahil, let me tick through some of the things we heard from the former president. He said he'd likely pardon many of the January 6th rioters. He acknowledged that he took classified documents to his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago. He urged Republicans to let the U.S. go into default if they couldn't reach an agreement with Democrats on raising the debt limit, cutting spending. Is he speaking for Republicans at this point, the entire party?
He is certainly not speaking for the entire party, but let's just say in the entire party, if not the vast majority of it, is afraid of him and afraid of his base, the voters within the conservative coalition that he has an enormous amount of influence over. But what we saw was a brash, unapologetic, unvarnished Trump, the same Donald Trump that the country has been accustomed to for a long time. I think it's absolutely true that he is making no effort to reach out to the independent suburban voters who he lost in 2020, who were responsible for the reason he's no longer in the White House. His path to victory, as his advisors seem to see it, or I guess at least he envisions it, is to supercharge his base, to boost turnout, and hope that some of the people who, you know, showed up to vote for Joe Biden in 2020 don't show up. Realistically, that's his only path to winning. But he's gotten deeper into the kind of conspiracy thinking that was a little bit on the periphery. He would dabble in that stuff, but now it's such a big part of who he is, including January 6th. He's kind of defending, if not embracing, a number of the rioters who attacked the Capitol. He is vigorously promoting his lies about the 2020 election being stolen, despite, you know, many, many court cases, despite a litany of evidence showing that that is untrue. And you brought up the point about the debt limit. That is arguably the most interesting, most impactful comments for the foreseeable future, because there is a crisis on the horizon. Could be coming as early as June 1st. The country could default on its debt if there is no agreement in Congress. And Trump is basically egging Republicans on to say default on the debt unless Democrats accede to major conservative policy concessions.
So, Domenico, speaking of the debt, we learned last night that President Biden and Speaker McCarthy will not meet as planned today to negotiate spending cuts and the debt limit. Their staffs will continue to meet, but time is really running out. What does this all mean?
Well, they actually take this as a positive note, the White House, because you don't want to bring something back to the principles that isn't fully baked or not complete. And they said that they're making progress, actually, at the staff level. Now, what that means, we don't exactly know. We don't know what negotiations there are, if there are any, on specifically spending cuts or anything else, or if they're doing a side-by-side or whatever it's going to take. You know, I think the White House thinks that they have a little bit of leverage in exploring these extraordinary measures of looking at some particular executive actions or using somehow the 14th Amendment, you know, which says that Congress has to pay its debt, the country has to pay its debts. But there really is not a clear off-ramp for any of this for everyone to save face and for the country not to get to a point where it does default on its debts for the first time.
I do just briefly want to touch on news this week that New York Congressman George Santos was indicted on federal fraud charges. And it is related to this conversation about the debt ceiling, because McCarthy, Sahil, cannot afford to lose anyone, including someone as toxic as George Santos.
That's exactly right. And that's one of the reasons, I would argue the reason that Speaker McCarthy has kept George Santos around this long. He wants that vote. Santos has been useful to McCarthy in that he is a reliable vote for, you know, McCarthy's agenda and his speakership, as it were. And right now, McCarthy has a House majority where he can only lose four Republicans. If George Santos goes, that tiny majority would shrink even further. And the other reason McCarthy is keeping him around is that strategists close to McCarthy believe that they have a better shot at holding that seat if Santos hangs around and the election next fall is between two incumbents, a new Republican and a new, two non-incumbents, a new Republican and a new Democrat, rather than an incumbent Democrat, who in that swing district that Biden won could flip that suite, could flip that seat if Santos resigns and triggers a special election.
A lot of news we just fit into that conversation. Thanks to you both, Sahil Kapoor, senior national political reporter for NBC News, and Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent for NPR. Thanks.
You're welcome. Enjoy your weekend.